Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. New York, this is Democracy Now!
I'm really surprised at what happened to me. I had felt that I was immune because I was an alumni of Indiana University, but I see the university administration is more sensitive and responsive to higher administrative pressure from the government than they are to the welfare of their own community.
Canceled. Today we talk to two Palestinian-American artists. Samia Halabi's life retrospective, 3 years in the making, was canceled by her alma mater, Indiana University, over her opposition to Israel's assault on Gaza. And we'll speak to Emily Jassir, who was scheduled to give a talk in Berlin, Germany. We'll also talk to German-American Jewish Holocaust survivor Marion Ingram, who has stood outside the White House for months calling for a Gaza ceasefire. Her talks in her native Hamburg, Germany, were canceled.
Apparently, my criticism of Israel's actions in Gaza has caused the politician to be very upset. And it turns out that criticism of Israel is unacceptable to Germans.
And we'll hear from the Russian Jewish-American writer, Masha Gessen. A major award ceremony for her was canceled in Germany. Today, art and resistance. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Pakistan's Air Force has launched retaliatory airstrikes on Iran as tension continues to escalate across the region. 9 people were reportedly killed in Iran, including 3 women and 4 children. Pakistan said these strikes targeted separatist militants based near the Iran-Pakistan border. The attack came a day after Iran bombed members of the Sunni militant group Jaish al-Adl in the Pakistani province of Balochistan. On Wednesday, Iran's foreign minister, Hossein Amir Abdullahian, acknowledged Iran had carried out recent bombings in both Pakistan and Iraq.
پاسخ ما روی تروریست های ایرانی در داخل خاک.
Our focus is on the Iranian terrorists on Pakistani soil. Before this conversation, I discussed with my colleague, the foreign minister of Pakistan, that we respect the integrity of Pakistan. We respect the integrity of Iraq, but we will not allow them to play with the security of our country.
The U.S. military has attacked Yemen for the 4th time in a week, launching ship and submarine missile strikes on Houthi-controlled areas Wednesday. The attack came a day after the Biden administration redesignated the Houthis, who rule much of Yemen, as a global terrorist group. The Houthis have been disrupting global shipping routes by carrying out attacks in the Red Sea and the Gulf of Aden in an attempt to pressure Israel to halt its bombardment of Gaza. Meanwhile, U.S. forces are continuing to search for 2 U.S. Navy SEALs who were lost at sea off the coast of Somalia last week after a group of Navy SEALs stopped a ship allegedly containing Iranian-made missile parts. In Gaza, at least 16 Palestinians, including many children, have been killed in an Israeli airstrike on a home in Rafah, which has been designated by Israel as a so-called safe zone. The families killed had reportedly come to Rafah for safety after being displaced 3 times over the past 100 days. One relative told Al Jazeera, quote, they fled their homes in Gaza City to the Barij refugee camp, Khan Yunis, before coming to Rafah because they thought it was safer. The grandmother of the children killed in the Israeli attack spoke outside the bombed-out house.
I was in the school when the strike happened at dawn, and I came running. I found the rubble. I went to the hospital and found all my grandchildren have been martyred. All of them are young children. The biggest one is in second grade, and the rest are even younger. What have they done wrong?
Meanwhile, in Gaza City, rescuers raced to a home where Palestinian children were buried under rubble after an Israeli attack.
In this house, there's children. We're trying to get them out since the morning. With every attempt, airstrikes and rockets fall on us. Our neighbors from the Ahmad Bouli family came to help us. The first two who went in were martyred. What sin did those children commit to die like that? The number of those who were inside the house is more than 25 people. They were all martyred. The whole house collapsed on them completely, as you can see. More than one missile hit this area. This area was shelled by many missiles at the same time.
In other news from Gaza, Israel's blown up Israel University south of Gaza City. According to a post on the school's Facebook page, Israeli troops had seized the campus months ago, turned it into a military base where Israel interrogated detained Palestinians. There are reports Israel's killed another journalist in Gaza. Palestinian news outlets report Wael Fanouna, the manager of Al-Quds Today TV, was killed today in an Israeli bombing in Gaza City. Over 110 journalists have been killed since Israel began its assault on Gaza following the October 7th Hamas attack on Israel. On Wednesday, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres called again for a ceasefire in Gaza.
I repeat my call for an immediate humanitarian ceasefire in Gaza and the process that leads to sustained peace for Israelis and Palestinians based on a two-state solution. That is the only way to stem the suffering and prevent the spillover that could send the entire region up in flames.
In the occupied West Bank, Israeli forces have killed at least 10 Palestinians in a series of military raids. Israel launched airstrikes on the Tulkarm refugee camp and the Balata refugee camp as ground troops conducted extensive raids. The Palestinian Red Crescent accused Israeli troops of blocking ambulances from reaching the Tulkarm refugee camp, which has been under siege for over 30 hours. In Britain, the House of Commons has approved legislation to send some asylum seekers to Rwanda, even if they have no ties to the African country. The bill declares Rwanda is a safe country for asylum seekers, despite a recent UK Supreme Court ruling saying the opposite. The bill is expected to face opposition in the House of Lords, where one member has described the legislation as a, quote, step towards totalitarianism. In Washington, D.C., President Biden met with congressional leaders at the White House Wednesday in a bid to break through deadlocked negotiations on Biden's request for $100 billion in supplemental military funding for Israel, Ukraine, and Taiwan. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer said he was optimistic about a possible deal following the meeting, while House Speaker Mike Johnson doubled down on House Republican demands to further crack down on immigration, saying the proposed Senate deal is, quote, dead in the House. In related news, Texas has defied a Biden administration cease and desist order, refusing to dismantle its border barrier near the city of Eagle Pass on the Rio Grande. Texas troopers took over the 2.5-mile stretch last week, installing fencing, gates, and razor wire. On Friday, a mother and her two children, aged 8 and 10, drowned in the Rio Grande after Border Patrol agents were denied access to the area by Texas officials acting under orders from Republican Governor Greg Abbott. In Ecuador, a prosecutor who was investigating a recent attack on a TV station has been assassinated. Cesar Suarez was killed in the city of Guayaquil on Wednesday. This comes less than 2 weeks after Ecuador's president, Daniel Noboa, declared a state of emergency due to a surge in violence by drug cartels. In recent days, the slain prosecutor, Cesar Suarez, had interviewed 13 gunmen who stormed a live TV set earlier this month and took the staff hostage on air. The U.S. State Department has barred former Guatemalan President Alejandro Giammattei from entering the United States over his involvement in, quote, significant corruption. The decision was announced just days after Giammattei left office. Early on Monday, Guatemala's new president, Bernardo Arevalo, was sworn in despite efforts by Guatemala's attorney general, conservative lawmakers, and the elite ruling class who spent months trying to prevent his presidency. Arevalo was elected in August after running on an anti-corruption platform. In the United States, the judge in E. Jean Carroll's defamation trial threatened to expel former President Donald Trump from the courtroom Wednesday for repeatedly disrupting the proceedings. Trump could be heard loudly telling his attorney that the trial was a witch hunt and a con job. Trump's disruptions came as the writer E. Jean Carroll took the stand and accused Trump of shattering her reputation. A trial last year found Trump had sexually abused E. Jean Carroll in the 1990s and then defamed her. At this new trial, a different jury is determining if Trump owes her more money for other acts of defamation. Trump's trial is occurring just ahead of New Hampshire's Republican primary Tuesday, the first primary in the nation. On Wednesday, ABC canceled its New Hampshire Republican debate after former South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley refused to participate if Trump did not take part as well. Trump has so far declined to debate any of his Republican challengers. Haley's facing criticism this week after claiming the United States was never a racist country. She made the comment during an interview on Fox News.
Are you a racist party? Are you involved in a racist party?
No. We're not a racist country, Brian. We've never been a racist country.
Haley's comment comes just weeks after she failed to mention slavery as one of the causes of the U.S. Civil War. In other campaign news, a judge in Maine has suspended a decision by the state's Secretary of State to remove Donald Trump from the primary ballot for violating the insurrectionist clause of the 14th Amendment. The judge said the U.S. Supreme Court should weigh in on Trump's eligibility first. The high court is hearing oral arguments February 8th. The conservative-led Supreme Court Wednesday heard arguments in a case that threatens to severely restrict the regulatory authority of federal agencies on issues ranging from environmental protection to guns to health care. The case centers around the Chevron deference, a precedent established in 1984 which requires courts to defer to an agency's interpretation of laws. Fishing companies are challenging the doctrine, long maligned by corporations and the right. The legal effort is backed by far-right interest groups, including the network of billionaire Charles Koch. Liberal Justice Elena Kagan defended the practice, saying, quote, "And it's best to defer to people who do know, who have had long experience on the ground, who have seen 1,000 of these kinds of situations," Kagan said, adding, "And, you know, judges should know what they don't know," unquote. A ruling by the Supreme Court's expected in the summer. In a major antitrust ruling, a federal judge in Boston's blocked the merger of JetBlue and Spirit Airlines, saying the merger would hurt consumers. In his ruling, Judge William Young wrote, quote, "The airline industry is an oligopoly that has become more concentrated due to a series of mergers," unquote. Last year, the Department of Justice in six states sued to stop the merger. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau has proposed a rule that could drastically lower overdraft charges at the nation's largest banks. If approved, many bank customers could see their overdraft fees drop from about $35 to as little as $3. The agency estimates the new rule could save households up to $3.5 billion annually. Banking trade groups have decried the proposed rule changes. A new study finds Greenland's ice cap is losing an average of 30 million tons of ice every hour due to the effects of the climate crisis. Researchers with NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory published their findings in the journal Nature, which show the ice loss is 20% greater than previously thought. Scientists fear the additional fresh water pouring into the North Atlantic could lead to a collapse of ocean currents, which would trigger devastating disruptions to global weather patterns, ecosystems, and food security. And Azerbaijan, the host country of this year's UN Climate Summit in December, has come under fire after it unveiled its organizing committee for COP29, made up of 28 men and no women. The group, She Changes Climate, blasted the regressive decision, they said, saying, quote, climate change affects the whole world, not half of it, unquote. The organizing committee does, however, include oil and gas executives. Early this month, Azerbaijan's environmental minister, Mukhtar Babayev, was named as COP29's president. He previously spent 26 years at the state oil company of the Azerbaijan Republic, or SOCAR. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. When we come back, canceled. We speak with two Palestinian-American artists and a German-American Jewish Holocaust survivor who have all been canceled over their support for Palestine and opposition to Israel's assault on Gaza. Stay with us. ناخد قرار ارجع لحضنا بقدم لك كل شي عندي يا أغلى حدا عندي لآخر لحظة بغني أنا قلبي صابر 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 يا صابر 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 أنا قلبي صابر 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 يا صابر 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 فليت الحق علي ما رح انساك ولا رح فيك صابر or patient choir version by Dana Harani. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Mimi Goodman.
And I'm Nermeen Sheikh. Welcome to our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world. Over the past 3 months, artists, writers, and other cultural workers in the United States and Europe have faced a backlash after expressing solidarity for Palestine as Israel has continued its relentless assault on Gaza. Talks and performances have been canceled, artworks deinstalled, exhibits removed, and livelihoods threatened. Today we speak with two Palestinian-American artists. One was canceled by her own alma mater, Indiana University. The other was canceled in Berlin. And we'll speak with a German-American Jewish Holocaust survivor who stood outside the White House for months calling for a ceasefire in Gaza. She was scheduled to speak at a number of schools in her native Hamburg, but was told her appearances were canceled. We begin with Samia Halabi, a renowned Palestinian visual artist, activist, educator, and scholar. Samia Halabi's first U.S. retrospective, which had taken 3 years to organize, was abruptly canceled by Indiana University's Ashkenazi Museum of Art over her criticism of Israel's bombardment of Gaza, which she's described as a genocide. Before we speak with Samia about what happened, let's turn to a short documentary about her life and work by Palestinian-Jordanian filmmaker Munir Atalla. This is Samia talking about moving with her family to the United States as a teenager from Palestine.
In 1951, my father and mother had come to the decision that it was safer to bring their family up in the U.S. I did not want to come. I was 14 and it was to high school. I couldn't decide between the sciences. It was my mother who finally said, "You always loved art, why don't you study art?" Tenure at Indiana University and decided that really I wanted to be in New York, but it's hard to just pick up and have no money and come to New York, a city I don't know anybody or anything in. I moved in 76. I continued trying to get a gallery for years. It was total rejection. In this world, people don't see, if you're Palestinian, don't see what you make. They see you.
and they don't like us Palestinians.
This is another clip of Samia talking about the process of creating her art and how abstraction can result from a new way of seeing.
I work on 2, 3, sometimes 4 or 5 paintings at the same time. When I enter to get going, then the paintings begin to permeate my consciousness. The paintings do not arise out of feelings. They arise out of thinking. And I'm very scientific in the way I think and plan. But when I do them, I trust my intuitions.
Fulfilling every whim that comes along.
Balancing back and forth between what I intuit is right and what I want to do. And which one wins is hard to tell. When a painting is going badly, I'm feeling badly. But not because my feeling is in the painting. I'm reacting to frustration. But when it's going well, I'm very happy because I've captured something I've wanted to capture. As I was saying about Palestine, something remains that I almost feel it with my hands. I can make it. I put it in a painting. But it's not a photographic image. It's what remains visually in memory. It's something palpable and real. What your iPhone or cell phone is telling you when you take a picture is only a teeny slice of what is in front of it when you take the picture. It's an image of a fragment of time of reality. But a new abstraction can result from a new way of seeing.
An excerpt of Samia Halabi, a video portrait, a short documentary about the Palestinian-American artist's life and work. Samia Halabi's paintings are in the permanent collections of the Guggenheim Museum in New York, the National Gallery of Art in Washington, D.C., and the Art Institute of Chicago. And Samia joins us today in New York. We welcome you to Democracy Now! We've told a bit of the story, but you are one of the most prestigious Palestinian-American artists in these permanent art collections around the country. You were doing this life retrospective at your alma mater, Indiana University, worked on it for 3 years, Samia. Can you tell us what happened right before it was to open?
Thank you, Amy. I'm really pleased to be with you and to tell my story and tell the story of what happened, which is very important also to the community in Bloomington and Indiana. Just immediately before, after a lot of work preparing, first I heard a little rumble that someone was paying attention to the fact that I'm Palestinian. Other than that, I had expected being an alumna and a one-time professor who had been awarded tenure to be somewhat immune because I knew the atmosphere in the country. And so the sudden cancellation came as a surprise. It was amazing to know that they would go ahead and act in this way when a catalog that's 1 inch thick and hardcover had been printed and delivered. Plans for the opening were being made. The artwork was picked up by the shippers. Everything was done in so beautifully in excellent museum fashion that suddenly after the few days after the pickup of the paintings, I hear a very brief notice, a two-sentence letter saying the show is canceled and the art will be returned to me. I wrote 2 letters suggesting in very friendly terms that they reverse this decision, but I have not heard a word back from them. And you know, Amy, this was a twin retrospective committed to my relationship to the Midwest. The Midwest had been a place where I had felt was my second home. I really enjoyed my education there. I arrived in the U.S. at age 14. I'm 87 now. And I remember the University of Cincinnati with a great deal of affection for the great education we received there. I remember it being an atmosphere that was very open and radical My teachers were all inspired by the resistant painters of the time, like Benchan. They were in admiration of the industrial union movement. The Great Depression was still in people's memory. And the professors were all very enlightened and advanced and talked a lot about academic freedom. My feeling is I wished I could bring that batch of attitudes on those professors to modern, to contemporary American education. Maybe I'm going on too long, Amy, but my feeling towards what happened to me is that the administration has lost sight of their responsibility to the community, to the students who are there. They're trying to stop students from moving forward with thinking, with their creative process politically. They're being more responsible to pronouncements from the government and from threats, perhaps, from parts of the government, but not at all responsible. A division is taking place in their position of being having administrative power, but no responsibility to the real community. I feel the students, the repression of the students right now in the country who are the most advanced, the new partnership between the young Palestinians and all they're doing and the young Jews who and all that they are doing, they're so disciplined and determined and clear thinking. I'm really in admiration for them, and I think this act is suspension of cancellation is as much against them as it is against me and the curator of the show. We mustn't forget about the curator, a curator beginning their career to whom this was a very important show, Elliot Reichert, who was magnificent in his, as was all the staff at the museum, magnificent in their effort. So I'm very...
Samia Halabi, we'd like to get your response to the formal explanation that Indiana University, your alma mater, where you received your master's degree, the formal response that the university gave to why your show was canceled. The university provost, Rahul Srivastav, spoke at a faculty council meeting and addressed the backlash over the decision to cancel your show. He called your exhibit a, quote, potential lightning rod that could incite protests, and said that 3 months for it to be on view would require long-term security, adding, quote, I have to make a decision on keeping a project, a program going when there is a risk of violence or a risk of other incidents. I would err on the side of caution. So, Samia Halabi, your response to that?
Well, my response to that is, first of all, they never gave me a reason, and they never responded. And they never even talked to me. So I got the impression that they didn't like my, from a very brief phone call with the director of the museum, that one way or the other, my general attitude and support of Palestine and criticism of Israel and U.S. partnership, U.S.-Israel attacking Palestine and especially the massacre, the unbelievable massacre in Gaza, both destruction of people and of culture, that my anger with that and my support of the Palestinians was the cause. I think this idea that they're so terrorized or frightened by me being a lightning rod and the show bringing, I think the students, to their majority, were for the show. They would have been delighted to see the show. I think this idea of a lightning rod for trouble is their imagination, their invention. It's just a propaganda, invention. I don't see that. You know, museums guard their work, always guard what is there, and they could have put a second guard on the show if that's they're so frightened. But canceling it, considering all of the grants they received, all the expenses they went through, it's just not reflective of this kind of fear. Museums all over are concerned about art. So, that's my reaction to that. You know, I would like to say some more about what's happening in Gaza because it connects to art. First of all, I do want to say that this is much larger than I am. There's suppression of students throughout the U.S. There's suppression of faculty. There's one faculty member at Indiana University who's been censured for a